All right, it's time to reconvene, and we will give away two door prizes this time. So, Kim, you ready? She's ready.
Our first door prize, it starts out with a $25 Subway gift card from Glenn and Ursula McCauley.
And no, that's who it's from.
That's who it's from. Sorry. And also appropriate to our convention, there's a CD by Terry Kelly called The Power of the Dream. And a Canadian goodie container of candies.
And that is going to John Domenico.
Domenico.
Try again. I really try hard to give these away, you know. How about Beth Marceau?
Yay! You want to do another one?
We have one more door prize to go. This is, I'm trying to read it upside down. This is an Amazon gift card for $25. And this, there's also a $5 Starbucks card and sugar cookies and bath salt set from Lisa and Reggie George. And that is going to Chris Brame.
Chris, you here?
Nope. Is he in the?
And he was just giving me a bad time this morning that he didn't get one.
Okay.
Okay, next one.
Yep. No. That goes back in the bucket over here. Okay, that is going to Earl Hickey.
Way in the back. All right, thank you, Kim. At this time, I am very pleased and honored to turn the floor over to Frank Cuta, who will speak to us about audio description.
Thank you. Let's roll. I don't know about this microphone. Oh, yeah, it works. Okay. So we have a solid group of people, about 8 to 14 people that attend each of the local plays that are produced here in the Tri-Cities. And we all go together and we get them described. And so I'm going to tell you a little bit about how that's done in case you want to do it in your community. Allowed 20 minutes. I don't think it's going to take that long. So it's possible to do your own audio description. I'm sure that many of you have enjoyed attending local plays and musicals. If you live in a large city like Seattle, you've probably attended some plays that are actually audio described. When audio description is available, you get a more full experience. You don't miss the sight gags, and all manner of action that is purely visual, becomes accessible. In a large city, there are adequate resources to support the funding of this kind of a service. In Seattle, they have a nonprofit organization, I think, that provides a service. This is great. But if you live in a small community and you want your community plays described, you may have to do it yourself. However, you don't need a great deal of funding or professional training to provide audio description. It's not difficult to do if you've got a few dedicated volunteers. The United Blind of Tri-Cities has been providing audio description for our local plays in Richland for over 30 years. We use all volunteers and work on a very small budget. This is what you need. If you want to describe this in your, if you want to try this in your community. First, ideally, you should have three dependable volunteers. I'll describe which all three of them in time here. Second, you need some basic wireless equipment and an inobtrusive place in the theater for the describer to sit. We use a commercially available assistive listening system as the wireless system, and our describer sits in the sound and lighting booth above the audience where he can look down on the play through a window. The third requirement is you must have a describer. He has a copy of the script and he has marked up ahead of time, and he provides audio description using the microphone and transmitter of the assistive listening system. Each of the attendees has a wireless audio receiver and an earphone that lets them listen to the description as it is broadcast. We have never taken the trouble to actually train a describer, although such training is available, and many even claim that it's necessary. Rather, we found that it's easier just to find it, identify a sharp, dedicated individual, one that is willing to make some preparations ahead of time, one that has the judgment and sensitivity to describe the action without interpreting the action, and one that can fit it in without talking over the actors. It does take a special person, but we've never had trouble finding such an individual. And in an emergency, we've even had the spouse just jump in and do it cold. And no, it's not ideal, but it works. I said that you need three individuals to do it right. Besides the describer, you need a second volunteer to be the administrator. This person picks the performance date, makes sure that the members are contacted, and is responsible for selecting a describer. Depending on your budget, you may also use chapter resources to buy season tickets, and that way you can all go as a group. This isn't necessary, but this is where we do it in the Tri-Cities. In this case, the administrator is also responsible for buying the tickets and making the reservations. You'll probably also need a third volunteer. This person is volunteer for the equipment. The person watches the battery levels, makes sure the equipment is all serviced, and brings it to the play and distributes the receivers to the listeners and the transmitter to the describer. A word about cost. If you have everyone buy their own tickets, your only expense is for the assistive listening system. This is a one-time expense, and you can either do a special fundraiser just for that purpose, or you can get the Lions or the Rotary probably to buy it for you. Assistive listening systems start at about $400. A good resource for more information about audio description is the ACB website, which is acb.org, and that's all I have. Any questions? Okay, it's ADP, Audio Description Project. So it's acb.org/ADP. And I couldn't remember. Sometimes I get initials wrong, so I didn't guess on that. But it is ADP. Are there any questions?
Front row has a question. Needs a mic.
Do we have a runner?
This is Becky. I just have a quick question. Do you ever do the audio description not just at the plays but in an actual movie theater?
No, it's becoming less and less necessary, actually. And most of the theaters here in the Tri-Cities now offer that as a free service.
This is Cindy.
Yeah.
So you say that this system is about $400 to start. For $400, what would that get you? And like how many receivers? I guess I'm trying to envision exactly what you need.
Yeah, I can answer the question. That will get you a handheld transmitter for the describer, three receivers, and what we've found is possible is every person doesn't need a receiver because you can get a splitter. And so you could, if two people sit side by side, you put a splitter in and two people listen on one receiver will drive two earphones, okay? So that gets six people, basically, for $400.
I just have a comment. I actually was in a play that was... This is Sarah Edick. I was actually in a play that was audio described back in 96 at the Empty Space Theater in the Burning Darkness. I don't know if anybody remember. I remember it. It was fun. And I remember there
you
was
have a question.
I just wonder what happens... What do you guys do if somebody makes mistakes? Because in our play, like, there was a problem lighting the cigarette. And so what happens if somebody has trouble doing something in the play? Do they say, like, well, he's doing it again?
It'd be up to the judgment of the describer. I mean, there's no rules about that. So it's just you need to find a describer with a judgment to give you the information that you want, you know, that an average person wants to get a lot out of the play. And if you think that's really important, then, you know, a person might describe that.
This is Reg. Just wondered if you could speak to some of the challenges and also how you were able to find a theater that was willing to work with you and allow you to provide the description.
I don't think we ever asked for permission, actually. Some of the challenges were, but the sound and lighting booth where the describer sits is basically a closet up there, and there's not much room. So there's not room for even us to take a good tabletop transmitter. The guy's got to have a little wireless handheld transmitter because there's not table space or stuff up there. But they've accommodated us. They've never given us a bad time about that. And finally, after 30 years, the new manager is facilitating for us now. But it's the first time it's happened, you know. And he made sure that we're all accommodated and we all got our tickets and we have a describer and everything, and he's just really great to work with. One of the challenges is some of the plays have adult content. And many of the describers and many of the listeners have trouble with that. And so you just have to deal with it. I know our describer that's described now for 8 or 10 years, there's a few things he didn't tell us because it was just, it's just the kind of thing he wanted to describe, you know. There was an instance, I better not. Ask me afterwards if you want to hear about some of the instances. The only other thing was, we have we are still using the assisted listening system that we bought 30 years ago. And I thought, it might be interesting to upgrade this technology, and I'll take the Washington Council of the Blind system in there. It's a new narrow band, digital, da-da-da, and maybe it'll work better. And it screwed up their lighting system. They were running with a computer and running Bluetooth or some darn thing, and it screwed up their automated lights. So we went right back to the old system. those are some of the challenges. You worked through all those things. We've never had any serious problems.
Frank, Peggy here. I wanted you to talk a little bit more about the equipment, and you were starting to do that. So you're using the same equipment that you've used for a long time. Are you? Do you know if on the ACB website if there are recommendations for equipment that people can get? And then that's one. And then the other is the sound quality from the headphones that you guys have, is it pretty good?
It's voice quality. I mean, that's all you need. I mean, it's not music quality. It's made for assistive listening, which is generally voice, you know.
Sure.
Basically two technologies. There's the, you know, RF, and there's infrared. And the advantage of the infrared is there's no interference from other things, and it doesn't go outside the room. It's light, and it only goes so far, you know, it's stopped by walls. RF, you can pick up other things from, you know, cop cars driving by and pushing their transmitters and things like that. Other than that, I don't know about recommendations. In terms of brands, there's some major brands, and you just search for assistive listening systems on Amazon, and you'll see there's quite a few brands, and you'll see reviews out there, you know, that are posted by people that have bought them and used them. I don't know if the ACB has taken any stand on that. No, I don't know.
So I have a question. So you guys are just talking about plays and things. Have you guys ever tried to use this audio description for sports games and other things? And if so, what difficulties have you guys noticed, or what situations have you guys run into doing it?
No, we have never tried that. And the only experience I have that is with baseball games. And, you know, I usually listen to the radio broadcast and get a lot. A describer would have to really be good and know a lot about the game, you know. A describer to describe a play, all you have to do is describe the action. To do sports, you've got to understand the sport.
Okay. Hi, Frank. This is Mika.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that you have done this before, but I've feel like I hear a lot of brain wheels turning in people's heads. I'm wondering if you could please write an up-to-date article about this for our next news line so that all of us can be up to date.
All right. I would be glad to do that. One more question.
One more. I have a question.
Okay, one quick question is, Frank, with the product that you were promoting yesterday, wouldn't that kind of do the same thing?
What was I promoting yesterday? Ira. No, it would not. It was way too expensive. My gosh. But you could, yes, you could do that if each person could afford it. Yeah.
Hmm?
That's it. Thank you very much.
Bruce, can you get a microphone? I was asked to make an announcement, and I forgot when we reconvened, so I'm going to ask Sherry Richardson to make her own announcement so I don't mess it up.
Hi, everybody, and thank you, Steve. Thursday night, I seem to have lost or misplaced my Apple AirPods, and those are the little earbuds that go in a plastic charging box. They are together in the plastic charging box. It's a white plastic box, about an inch square. If any of you happen to have found them or know anything about them, I would very much appreciate having them back. Thank you.
All right, thank you. All right, one of our most popular segments of convention every year is the report from the Big Three. And these are our state agencies and programs that serve our community so well. And I'm going to read their names and titles, because, again, I'll bungle it. So with us, we have Scott McCollum, who is superintendent of the Washington State School for the Blind, commonly known as the school, or the state school. It's like everything. We have to abbreviate it or turn it into some type of series of alphabet letters. We also have Danielle Miller, program manager, librarian for the Washington Talking Book and Braille Library, commonly known as WATABL, and Michael McKillop, assistant director for the Department of Services for the Blind. Also reduced to a three-letter acronym, DSB. So let's start with, we'll just go in order, and Scott, you have the floor.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody. It's freezing up here, up in the front of the room. Well, good morning, everybody. It's such a pleasure to be with all of you today. As was mentioned, my name is Scott McCollum, and I am the superintendent of the Washington State School for the Blind, or as what I will call WSSB. For anyone wondering, I've already connected with Andy about having him come down to the school to teach some self-defense. When that question was raised, I had already had my card out. I'm like, I got to have this guy come down. But it's really great to be here. I'd be remiss if I didn't start by thanking some of you wonderful people that help provide leadership and guidance at the school. And I really wanted to harass Burl for not being here today, but I hear he's got a great reason to not be here. So I would like to recognize Burl Cawley, who serves on our Board of Trustees representing Congressional District 10 for the state of Washington. Let's give him a round. We also have the fantastic Jolene Ferguson, who serves on our Board of Trustees. And yesterday, we had some staff here. I think we still might have a staff member present. Yesterday, you met Emily and Diette. They're very wonderful. They're not here today, but let's give them a round of applause. They stole a lot of my thunder, so I'll keep it really short today. We also have Brooke Richardson, and Brooke is a teacher at the school. She's also a goalball coach for the school, and she'll be taking our goalball team to Youth Nationals next week. And so I know she's leaving really early in the morning, so let's give her a round of applause. So wish her luck. I apologize if I missed anybody out there. As I said, thanks for having me. I look forward to this opportunity to address all of you and get to know you throughout the convention. It's hard to believe for me that I've been at the school now for a year and a half. It feels like just yesterday I started, and just yesterday I was here addressing all of you, but in a different city. Since I've started, we've had some changes at the school that you may or may not be aware of. We just recently renamed the Kennedy Fitness Center in honor of Dr. Dean Stengem, our former superintendent. Dr. Stengem, as you're probably aware, served the school as a leader for about 30 years and played an integral role in getting the new fitness center at the school back in about 2008-09. And so just this September, we renamed it the Stengem Fitness Center. It doesn't quite roll off the tongue like Kennedy did, so we lovingly refer to it as the Sten Gym. I know some of you were there for the renaming ceremony, so was Dr. Stengem, many of his family members. It was a really, really great event, and so if you're down there, it's now the Stengem Fitness Center. Last year, we graduated 13 students. It was one of our biggest classes in recent history. We were honored to have Governor Jay Inslee as our commencement speaker. It was, really great to have him there. He's a really wonderful speaker, and he's been a great support to our school. Both he and his wife, Trudy, were there. So it's great, but losing 13 students leaves a big hole in our numbers at the school. So we've been actively getting new students this year. We have a whole crew of new students. And so it's been really wonderful getting to know these new students. We are forever looking for new and progressive ways to serve students, both at the school and around the state. And so you may be aware we've had an online program for a number of years. We continue that online program, and it's been utilized by students from throughout Washington, Oregon, Montana, and Alaska. So it's a really great program. We're working on our short-term programs. I think it was announced earlier, and I think you're all aware of Mr. Jeff Bowler. He was hired to lead that charge. He's a fantastic teacher at our school. We just sent Mr. Bowler out to the Perkins School for the Blind to study their short-term programs. That's probably the reason he's not here, because he was gone for a week and needs to be at work. As our school kind of changes, our outreach team continues to grow. Yesterday, Diet and Emily talked a bit about that. We serve about a fifth of the school districts in the entire state, which means we serve about a fifth of the students in the entire state. And we are growing by leaps and bounds. Our biggest challenge, as you probably heard yesterday, is finding personnel. So if anyone's interested in becoming a teacher of the visually impaired, we're always looking for folks and looking for ways to prepare teachers. We've started a collaborative relationship with the Office of the Superintendent of Public Instruction. They've provided some funding to pay for teachers who are already licensed in the state of Washington as either gen ed or special ed teachers to get their endorsement as teachers of the visually impaired through the Stephen F. Austin program. That's fully funded by the state, so a really wonderful opportunity. There's 8 people currently in that program, and the school has committed funds to hire a mentor teacher who provides supervision and mentorship to those 8 individuals and all of our new teachers in the state. We're also launching, as Emily mentioned yesterday, a Braille training program for teachers, instructional assistants, parents, anybody interested in improving their Braille skills. That just started last week, and we had over 50 people register and take part in that class. And so I see that as a big success for us. At the 11th hour of the last legislative session, you all know that an operating budget was passed, not a capital budget, but an operating budget. The state reaffirmed its support for our school and for students who are blind or visually impaired across the state by having no significant cuts to our budget. In fact, they offered additional funding for our Birth to Three program, which Diet mentioned yesterday, and so we have been able to hire new staff to reach babies on the east side, which I think is incredibly important. So as we make our through the year, things are rolling along. Everything's going really well at the school. Diet mentioned yesterday that she thinks she has the best job in the state. I would argue that I have the best job in the state. I not only get to work with really great people like those folks I mentioned, like Jeff and Diet and Emily and Brooke and on, but I get to access and work with kids every day. It's a really wonderful opportunity for me, and I'm very grateful to be there. I'd like to ask a favor from all of you, though. As you know, the school is very committed to accessibility. Our website is very important to us. It's very important that every bit of our website is not only accessible but user-friendly. So we've been going through a process of revision. Last year, at this time, we launched our new and updated website for the school and the state agency. And we've gone through an independent audit on that website. We've made many, many changes along the way. It continues to this day. I need feedback from all of you. I would really love it if you would visit our website. For those of you that don't know the school's website, it's www.wssb.wa.gov. Or you can just Google the Washington State School for the Blind, you'll find it. But on our front page of our website, there's a link for, it says WSSB Accessibility Survey. If you're accessing the site visually, it's on the bottom left-hand corner. It's highlighted in green. But it's a large box, and it has a short survey about the user experience of our website. We're seeking input from the community. I'll be talking about this same ask at the NFB conference next weekend, and I'm really, really would like to hear from you. So if you get a chance to go on our website, please go through the survey and be very critical. We want this to be the best website in the state. The governor has indicated his demands and support that all state agency websites be accessible. We want to lead the way in this with our partners that are up here with me today. And so please help us by providing feedback about your experience. So with that, I say thank you for being here. Thank you for allowing me to be here. Have a wonderful day and enjoy the rest of the program. And I think Danielle is coming up next.
Thank you. I'm Danielle. I'm the director and regional librarian of Wetabal, and I'm so glad to be with you. I wanted to start with a quote that I really like. It's from Jay Asher. He's a young adult writer, and it says, "You can't stop the future. You can't rewind the past. The only way to learn the secret is to press play." And I think that that really works for the library, right? Because it really resonates with what we do, and pressing play on the digital player or on the Bard app, on your Victor Stream or on your iPhone or whatever you're using to read our books. And you guys have really been pressing play this last year. Since I spoke to you last, you have downloaded 120,203 digital talking books from Bard, which is pretty awesome. And you have borrowed 273,099 digital talking books, which is great. And our local talking book production department, our own studios at Wetabal, finished 189 local books, started a Spanish language audiobook production program, and we have been moving as quickly as we can our locally produced books from what we like to call Baby Bard, which, if you remember, back in 2009, we were the only local library in the country to have our own books up available for download. So as we're producing new books and putting them up on Bard, we're moving our old local books up on Bard, which takes a little bit of work because we have to change the formatting structure to put them up on Bard. And we've got about 300 books still on our local Bard or Baby Bard, but we're moving up to regular Bard. And our books are really good, our locally produced books. And I know a lot of you are reading them, and those books on Bard, if you pay attention to book numbers, the books that start with DBC instead of just DB are locally produced books. And one of the books that has been really popular is J.A. Jantz, Failure to Appear. And that book was actually featured on the National Library Service blog as one of the most popular downloads of the year. And that was one that we produced. So that's really cool. And one of the things that pressing play, I think, also means is that you're open to trying new things. And that's something I think we're really able to do at Wetabal, is that we think about new ideas, we think about new things. And that's one of the secrets that made us, I believe, Network Library of the Year for the second time. That's right. Your very own Talking Book and Braille Library was awarded Network Library of the Year for the National Library Service for 2016 for the second time. 2009, we were also Network Library of the Year, and we're the only library in the country to have been acknowledged as Network Library of the Year two times. So that's pretty special. And you're recognized for that for three things. Those things are mission support, creativity and innovation, and patron satisfaction. And I think that we are able to achieve those things because of support from people like you, from our patrons, from our volunteers, and from my incredible staff. We couldn't do anything without all of those pieces coming together. For example, in mission support, one of the things that the National Library Service looks at is how you do outreach and how you go out to the community. And one of the standards they have is doing outreach visits three times a year. That's one of the standards. Well, we really focused on outreach, and one of the things we wanted to target was older adults and reaching out to the senior community. And last year, when we put in our application, so I guess that was 2015 numbers, 2015-2016, we visited 90 assisted living facilities in 53 cities. That's a little bit above the standard of three, right? So that's pretty good, I think. And when we were visiting those care facilities, what we were doing was checking in, did they have an organizational account? So an account for that facility that would reach out to their people living in the facility, and then trying to get individuals in the facility their own accounts if they were eligible, going to facilities that didn't already have accounts with us, checking in with public libraries, checking in with people who already had the service, and going around and really spreading the word about Wetabal. And we really did, I think, an excellent job at that and getting the word out. And thank you. I think we do a good job. We always have room to improve. Always, always, always. But I think we did a great job. And then in terms of creativity and innovation, I think what really did reach the mark there was our youth services program. And one of the ways there was through our accessible gaming lab, which we were able to create by a grant that we received. And there were a lot of great parts of that gaming lab, but one of the things that was really popular was giant Jenga, which, if anybody knows the game Jenga, it's where you have these logs and you stack them crosswise, so you have three going one direction and then three the other direction on top of them, and you build this tower. And you try and pull one out without toppling the tower. And each time, you take turns pulling them out until one falls over. Well, giant Jenga goes up to about 5 feet tall, which is about how tall I am. And when you have kids, especially a bunch of blind kids playing this, pulling these out, it's really terrifying. And it makes a gigantic crash when it topples over. And people had a lot of fun playing that. So taking this and these other accessible games around the state was really popular. And also, with our youth services program, we started a multi-sensory story time at the library every Friday. And that has gotten, it's still going on, and we have about 30 people attending that every Friday at the library. And that's been great to build early literacy skills and encourage people in the community. Our neighborhood in Seattle is really grown with Amazon taking over the neighborhood. So we have a lot of people coming in. And we've also partnered with the State School for the Blind Birth to Three program and the King County County Vision Services Parent-Infant Playgroup. So once a month, we've got babies and families coming in and participating in that program. So really a lot of creativity going on in youth services. And then in terms of patron satisfaction, we realized that one area that really has not had the same level of services are our Spanish-speaking patrons. So we did a couple things there. We knew we needed to improve what we have in our collection to serve them. So that's where we kind of reach back to creating our local book production in Spanish languages. So we recruited volunteers to speak Spanish and create those books in Spanish. We needed narrators and we needed reviewers. So we've got a team of 5 people producing those books. And we also surveyed our Spanish-speaking patrons to see what types of books they would want. And we have a staff person who speaks Spanish, a native Spanish speaker. So we started doing outreach events in the Hispanic and Latino community. And over the course of the year, we increased our Spanish-speaking patron population by 33%. So we've really been growing our efforts there. So that has been a great achievement. And we've done a lot of work there, but I don't want you to think that just because we have won this award twice and we've been doing great things that we're going to relax and stop working to keep improving things. So we want to keep innovating and provide you the best library service possible. So to that end, I was able to create a new librarian position that is going to focus primarily on outreach, focusing mostly on outreach to adults and seniors. And some of you may know my staff person, Amy Ravenholt, and she's moved into that position, and she has a good budget to travel around the state and do outreach, and she'll be going around. I want to talk to a lot of you and hear from you where I can get her matched up with you in your communities to visit retirement homes, care facilities, maybe put on some events at public libraries, coordinate. And so this is going to be a great way where we can hope to increase our number of users and reactivate people who maybe are not active in the service, do one-on-one training with people to use the player, to use Bard, to really be connected around the state. So we're not just physically in Seattle, but we have somebody out on the ground. So that's a very exciting thing. I also have a new youth services librarian who will be starting in 2 weeks. So we'll be able to continue to expand and create in the youth services program. Her name is Erin. So we'll be getting her out and about in the state, getting her connected with the school, doing great things there. I have a new assistant manager whose name is Alicia, and she has great project management experience. So she's going to be able to help me to continue and move the library forward. We have a pilot program called Patron-Centric Cartridges, which probably sounds really weird, but the goal there is to help people who have trouble getting the books that they want because they maybe don't download books, they don't have Bard, they don't have access to do that, and the choices for reading material that they want aren't readily available, so they find they don't often have enough books, or the books they like, they are waiting for a long time. So the idea with the patron-centric cartridges is that there can be a cartridge for that person. I'm looking at Michelle right now. So Michelle, I'm going to pick on you as an example, okay? So let's say Michelle is having a hard time getting the books that she wants. So we'll have a cartridge that's the Michelle cartridge. And so we'll be able to put multiple books on that cartridge. That'll be the Michelle cartridge just for her. And we'll put maybe 5 books on that cartridge. And that book, that cartridge will go to Michelle. She'll have those 5 books to read. When she finishes it, she'll send it back. At the same time, we'll have another Michelle cartridge going out to her with 5 more books. So it'll be a personalized service just for that person, with the books they need that they're not able to get themselves because they're not available or because they don't download or some scenario like that. So we're testing that right now because we don't want people to be missing out on the books they want or having a less satisfactory service because things aren't available. So that's in its pilot stages right now. We're hoping to be able to expand that in the future so everybody is getting the best quality service as possible. So stay tuned on that. If you are somebody that you really feel you're not getting your needs met right now, I'll be here tonight, today. Please come and see me, and we may be able to try and get you in the pilot. But definitely stay tuned on that. And I know some of you in here quite a while ago signed up with me for the text-to-speech pilot, and you may be wondering why you haven't heard from me. Well, it was supposed to start in April. NLS is having trouble with the files for the text-to-speech pilot, so it hasn't started. You're still in the pilot. If you were in the pilot, it hasn't kicked off yet. So I will keep you posted. I hope that we'll get there soon on that. Another thing that's really exciting that hopefully will be coming true in the next couple years, NLS was able to have legislation changed at the federal level to allow the circulation, the purchase and circulation of Braille e-readers, is what they're calling them. Yes. Which is essentially means that we will be able to purchase electronic Braille displays and loan them to patrons so that people can download, or we can loan you out, mail you Braille books on BRF files, essentially. So it'll be an equal service, just like we loan out a digital talking book machine and a digital book on a cartridge. Braille readers can have a Braille display and a Braille book, an electronic Braille book. So that'll be really amazing, and hopefully that'll be happening in the next couple years. And I'll leave you with the last enticing thing that is in the future on the horizon, is that the next model of the digital talking book machine will have wireless delivery. So we'll be able to beam you your books. You can call and talk to a reader's advisor and say, I want I have no idea what you want. I'm the librarian that's drawing the blank on a book, any name of a book. But you'll pick a book, and instead of sending it to you in the mail, it'll just show up, poof, on your player. So that's somewhere in our future, and I will leave you with that, and it's just wonderful to be here. Thank you.
Hello, everyone. This is Michael McKillop from Department of Services for the Blind. It's great to be here. Thank you for having us here. Luoma sends her love. She had a family event, so she's super sorry, but I'm glad because I get to be up here and talk to you all. Yesterday, there was a lot of good discussion. Today, there's been phenomenal discussion. I always love Sue, the employment panel. That's phenomenal to me. I live for that every year. There was some discussion about advocacy yesterday, and it got me thinking about, well, advocacy has worked in Washington State. There has been advocacy. We're living proof, Department of Services for the Blind. It's been 40 years since the consumer groups got us wrested out of DSHS, the Department of Social Health and Services, where we were threatened to be merged into the general agency and locked into DSHS. It's the consumer groups that got us out of there. And thank you is all I can say. Thank you for that advocacy. I can't tell you how every day that I talk to my colleagues from the General Vocational Rehabilitation Agency, and I'm so grateful for that act of advocacy that is, you are responsible for that, and that's been 40 years. So there is advocacy works, and I know that it wasn't easy. I know that there are a lot of forward steps, and then there were backward steps, and then there are forward and backward. I know that it took probably 7 years from the start of that to actually happen, and then another couple, 5 years of turmoil. So advocacy isn't easy. It's not a straight path. It's not always immediately successful. It takes that perseverance, and it takes that working together. And I have so much gratitude for you all for doing that for us. How do I know that? Because I wasn't really around in 1977. I was in Oregon. I know that because it was documented. The history of that was documented. And three-part history of DSB, how we became a separate agency, and how we became a commission, and then the importance of the State Rehab Council. And Carl Jarvis, I have to thank you for that. That's, again, the consumer groups documenting the history of those blind services that I'm able to put into the new employee packet, and so all our new employees understand that context and history of what you've done to create us and have us be who we are. So thanks. So about the agency, vocational rehabilitation, older blind, BEP, OTC, the theme, it seems, for the agency is change. Maybe that's just true for everything and everyone, change. But when I look at really the past year of our counselor base, one-third of our counselors are newer counselors in the past year, and over the past 5 or 6 years, two-thirds. And so, Carl, again, it's helpful to have that history because those beautiful counselors like Linda Wilder, who were there for 30-plus years, thank you, Linda, who carried that history internally, now we have a whole new group of energetic, passionate, customer-focused counselors that are amazing, but need that history to bring them along. So, also our managers, two-thirds of our managers this past year are new. There's been a lot of change, and it's not that we're a terrible place to work for. It's that a lot of people are retiring and having lives and outside of work. So I'm super happy for that. In employment, you know, there is no one job. I heard Sheila talking today about, you know, one job in the past. When I look at all the employment outcomes this past year, there's a wide, amazing group of career types and interests that fit that individual's aptitude and interest and ability. From technical writers to nurse practitioners to a judge to IT project managers to agricultural workers to investment fund managers, the world is your oyster. You have to know who you are and get the tools and get the skills, and you become what you want to be. There is no limits. Age is also no limit. I was having a discussion yesterday. Is there an age limit? Can you no longer get vocational services once you reach a certain magical age? And no, absolutely not. To let you know for that's true, I'm not just saying. Last year, our eldest individual who exited with an employment outcome was age 83. And that was to keep his real estate broker business, his self-employment. And he got the tools that he's able to keep working. But he's not the only one. There is someone who is age 81 who is a elementary school teacher and wanted to keep doing her work as an elementary school teacher. Phenomenal. When you look at the data, you know, people say the traditional working age is 18 to 65, but 9% of our employment outcomes were people age 65 and older, 23 or 60 and older, and 33, a full third of our employment outcomes are people who are 55 years and older. So no limits, okay, no limits. Younger people, too, are having amazing first job experiences as people in their mid-20s. Got hired on as aerospace engineers, as industrial organizational psychologists, as special ed teachers, as social service specialists, auto technicians, sound engineering. Again, no limits. World is your oyster. So that is our vocational rehabilitation program. A lot of change, but a lot of amazing things happening still. OTC, Orientation Training Center. I think so many of you have been touched by the Orientation Training Center in your lives. Have you not? Who? Yeah. It's an amazing place. I have to really thank Julie Brannon for leading and guiding that the past number of years. Phenomenal work. And I want to honor the students that make the choice to leave their home, what's known, all their friends, family, their support structure, to go into a new situation where you got to navigate with a whole bunch of new people in a very kind of tight-knit group situation and intensively learn skills of independence, that orientation mobility, the computers, how to cook, how to manage your home, all those skills. That's a hard choice to do. So OTC students, I know you're here, right? Oh, silence. They're out partying, man. They're out partying. They were here. They were here, and I still honor them. So, yay! I'm also proud of our Orientation Training Center staff. When the UEB certifications first came online, all the Braille teaching staff immediately, that was the first thing that they did, was get recertified into being able to teach UEB, and which is phenomenal. And I loved the fact that our Braille instructor, Joy, has created an amazing ability to do remote Braille training. And I know Julie Brannon pioneered that. And it seems, in my head, the most difficult thing to do, to learn remotely, but it works. And it's building Braille skills around the state for people that might have to wait to get those Braille skills. So I'm really super proud of the OTC for filling that need. Some of the other things that happen at the OTC, before any student graduates, they need to complete a challenge activity. It's called Capstone is what they've named it. And the note, the idea of that challenge activity is it's got to be something way beyond your comfort level. It's got to be something that takes in all the skills that you learned and pushes you into the world to utilize those skills and accomplish something. And what I love, too, is that after those activities, all the students present, and it's relayed through video to all the offices, so anyone can experience that challenge activity and the stories of the achievements that people created and experienced through those activities. Another new thing that the OTC has done is really focus on physical fitness. It's not just about learning, it's about the whole person. And one of the instructors made relationship with the gym that's in the area. And so once a week, students go and utilize the gym, learn how to use the equipment in an adaptive way, in a safe way, as well as every Friday they have yoga. So it's learning, mind, body, it's all important. Talked a little bit about change in the agency, and there's been change with our business enterprise program. In the past 2 years, we have a new manager, and we have new staff, and it's got a lot of energy. It's doing really well. There's some innovation that the vendors are doing. One of the things, one of the vendors in Olympia is part of a pilot project for Uber Eats, so their food delivery system. They're one of 20 restaurants in the Olympia area, the first 20 to try out Uber Eats, and I think that's going to be a successful venture. As well, the FAA headquarters has a new building, and that has given the BEP vendors an opportunity to look at themed style food, and it's going to be a gourmet burger and fries place. But that's something they've wanted to pilot in a lot of different venues, and that this is going to help give them some information on how best to do some of those theme style food presentations. And they're also looking at the square register, money access, the square, how to make that more practical, how to make it more usable for the vendors. Right now, it's usable, but because it has so many steps, there are people lining up as they're processing those transactions. So they've got a group of people together to look at how to make that more practical. If you were here yesterday, Diet and Emily challenged me to talk about the Blind Youth Consortium, and I'm happy to do that. A lot of what we do, we can't do alone. We do through collaboration, and certainly there's some enforced collaboration. There's been a new law that helps guide what our vocational rehabilitation services need to do, and we have to collaborate with our workforce partners, with Employment Security Division, with community and technical colleges, and the one-stop centers, all that. And, you know, I'm sure that it'll be great. I'm sure that collaboration will be great. What I'm always impressed is when the blind service providers get together and collaborate, because they do things. They get things done. The Blind Youth Consortium started meeting probably about 5 years ago, and it represented the Lighthouse, represented the School for the Blind, represented the Talking Book and Braille Library. There's representatives of special ed from the Educational Service Districts, Teachers of the Visually Impaired, DSB, and Washington Sensory Services, WSDS, came together, and really the initial thought was, how do we work together? What do? We need to understand each other. And that came up with the notion, identified that what we're really missing in this state is the early intervention services. The birth to three services are really not as vital and vibrant as they should be. And that was the group that created the job, description that Diet Snyder is doing and was able to get funded through the school. And the dream was to build that cadre of staff, and that's what the school is doing. So that's phenomenal, and I really honor the school for that focus. It's super important to start early with services. The other thing that this group has done this past year has identified another need for digital literacy and understanding kind of what's important to get digital literacy throughout the age development group. And we've created a technical team to look at that question. What is the digital literacy that's necessary for birth to three? What about from 3 to 8? What about, you know, later on in their years? And not looking at the products, but looking at the technology. And I think it's an impossible task. If you are curious about where they're at, Deb Cook is part of that group, and she'll probably tell you that's an impossible task we set. But I'm certain that we will come up with something that's very useful. So blind agencies get things done. I can't say that that's true from our employment partners. Want to talk about youth services. That's off the record, right? No one's hearing this, right? It's not going on radio, right? Just checking. Youth services, again, change. The Workforce Innovation Opportunity Act has required all vocational rehabilitation agencies across the nation to focus on youth activities, youth career exploration activities. It's called pre-employment transition activities, which is phenomenal. That's great. They asked that we set aside 15% of our budget solely for very specific career exploration services, very specific. We're the only state that understood that it's important to go young, and we start these services at age 9, the only state VR program that starts that early. Every other state agency is starting at age 14, or some are starting as late as 16 to get some of this career exploration done. We have an amazing group of youth service specialists who have put it together age-appropriate workshops that are fun, but also bring in that element of what's the career behind it? What's needed to be a worker in this industry? An example is the iFly workshop, where I think the Museum of Flight has a weightless, a big fan that you go in and you're basically flying. Very cool. And then after that activity, brought in some engineers to talk about how that works and what aerospace engineering is all about. Had another workshop where the students went into the, got to see Bertha, where they were tunneling for the tunnel in Seattle. Got to see Bertha, got to be in the tunnel, and then talk to engineers about what all that work is. There's some cooking workshops. This weekend actually is a Halloween-themed cooking workshop at DSB, to help get kids the skills to chop, to make, and all that. And, you know, is there a food service or a chef experience in their future? Getting kids involved in food, the family labor, is also important. So they learn how to clean toilets. They learn how to sweep. They learn how to do that. And these workshops have been genius at bringing the parents, getting the parents involved, and having the kids meet each other, but having the parents meet each other too, and start believing in their child's ability and start getting them folded into the family labor just like their sighted siblings are, which is critical for those independent skills and critical for those future working skills. So I'm super proud of what our youth services program has been doing. And then, of course, they've been doing all the summer workshops as well, the Yes One through the School for the Blind, where a two-week work exploration series, and the Yes Two, where there's work experience, paid work experience, 6 weeks up in Seattle. We expanded that. It had been like 18 students at a time, and this past year is 27 or 28. So we're growing that, and which is phenomenal. The Bridge program, where a student who's either a junior or a senior who wants college experience attends a college course at the Eastern Washington University and also gets involved with the Disability Student Services and how do you advocate for your own needs as a college student. What do you need to know about yourself, and how do you ask for what you need, and how it's different from the K-12 environment, where suddenly all that responsibility is on you. We've also expanded that program to include what's called the SWAG, and people ask me what it means, student work something something. I don't know what the something something is. But where people have had college experience, but they want college and work study experience, and getting that work study in a higher level targeted field of their interest. And so we started that again at Eastern Washington University this year, and it was wildly successful, where students worked in the DSS offices, worked in other fields, and got the work experience and got some college credit as well. So that's our youth services. The last little bit that I need to talk about is the older blind independent living. And again, the theme of change, although stability. You heard a lot from Sheila Turner, who does an amazing job through the Edith Bischel to provide those independent and older blind services. And one thing I also noted when Sheila was talking, telling her story, was that she wanted to be an interpreter. And one of the things I'm really, really proud of Edith Bischel doing is doing the outreach. And she's used her Spanish to do outreach to the Latino Hispanic communities and to, just like I heard the library, it's underserved communities and getting them connected to the services that they need and can benefit from. So thank you, Sheila. And that's happening around the state, independent living. The big change is that Deb Lewis, or Deb Cook, or Deb Cook Lewis, she's got AKA. One of the 20 jobs that she has is to manage our older blind program. And I think most of you probably know that there's been a countdown the past year for her towards retirement, which, you know, is scary for the older blind program. But what I'm proud of Deb doing is being very clear about it and being very planful and helping guide the agency into what needs to happen, what needs to be in place to make that transition as smooth as possible. She has a passion for older blind. She has a passion for independent living and the other 19 jobs that she does. And she's making sure that that transition is going to be as smooth as possible. So I'm much less afraid now than I was 6 months ago at that news that she's going to retire. And, you know, she's got the three identities and the 20 jobs because I think she has so much energy and so much creative genius that it can't be contained into one identity, right? So, but it's time for retirement and want to honor Deb for everything she's brought to the agency. So thank you, Deb. And I think that's all I've got. So that's enough, right? Thank you all.
Wow. To say that we are blessed is an understatement. Pay attention, ACB Radio. Washington State rocks. To have agencies and service providers like the Washington Talking Book and Braille Library, the Washington State School for the Blind, and the Department of Services for the Blind, we are so, so fortunate and have so much to be thankful for. So thank you for wonderful presentations and for all the work that you do from year to year. We have time for a few questions. And mics are running.
I have a quick question for all of you. This is Reg from Yakima. How does Washington State's failure to pass a capital budget affect all of your work and the critical services?
I'll start. This is Scott from the School for the Blind. It put a couple of our capital projects on hold. We had our dorms were slated to be re-roofed, and we have a sewer line that is in need of repair. And so those projects have been put on hold, and we're working through hopefully no catastrophic failures in those areas. Otherwise, we're still able to provide all the services that we had in place, and we'll keep our fingers crossed that the roofs don't leak and the sewer line is intact for the year.
Is anybody else responding to him?
This is Danielle. It does not affect Watauga directly, but the Washington State Library, which we are a program of, is working toward a new building combined with the state archives that would be in Olympia. And so they do not have any progress on that building at this point. So that impacts the Washington State Library and the Washington State Archives, but not Watauga directly.
And this is Michael DSB. No effect. We're not building anything at this time.
Okay. Cindy, I have a question for Danielle, and anybody else is welcome to answer the same question. But Danielle, at Watauga, how many employees currently do you have who are blind? Are there any current job openings? And what is the library doing to recruit people who are blind into open positions?
I currently have two staff members who are blind, both readers' advisors. I have one job opening that has been posted. It's closed now. It was open, and that's for our receptionist office assistant position, and we actually have interviews on Monday. I'm not aware that any of the applicants are blind. I guess I'll find out on Monday, which is a good question. Someone talked about maybe if somebody walks in with their cane, I'll know. So we'll see. I always hope that somebody will apply who is blind or has a disability. I always want people to. There have been jobs open before where people have talked about it, but people have to meet the qualifications of the job is always the deal. The last couple jobs that have been open have required a library degree, a master's in library and information science. And I know I've talked to people in the past, and said, please go to library school. I would love to have more librarians who are blind. I only know of a few in the National Library Service Network who are blind or visually impaired. So I'm always encouraging people to go into the profession. I know there's somebody who has gotten a scholarship the last couple years who's interested in librarianship. So I hope that that person continues along that path. Does that answer the question? Okay.
This is Scott from the School for the Blind. We have about 15% of our staff is blind or visually impaired, and in all levels, really. We have itinerant teachers who are blind. We have on-campus teachers who are blind. Our residential life manager, so our dorm manager, is blind. I don't actually count, but we have over 100 employees, and so about 15% is blind or visually impaired.
I guess I should have said we have 17 staff, so 2 of 17.
And this is Michael, since we're all answering. I know it was targeted to one. That is the challenge, and it's in our strategic plan that we need to be building and growing talent, qualified talent who can be blind role models in all of our positions at all our levels. I'm really proud that the past three hires actually have been individuals who are blind. We've got two more counselors who are blind. Erin Chavez, who is here, if you'd like to meet her. She's phenomenal. And then Stephanie Malore, who will be starting November 1st in Olympia. And one of the challenges has been that we all, I think, have such specialized services and specialized needs. And where we've really asked our counselors to try to identify those people that have the aptitude for the jobs that we need and start building our own. And I think that that's probably true for our most recent AT specialist and our most recent counselor, that we've been able to grow our own. It takes time. So if you know of people that are interested, have them get with their VR counselors and let's get going.
Okay. Danielle.
Okay, now it's working. Okay, my question would be, Danielle, you had talked about lots and lots of different things. Well, you all have, but Danielle, lots of new things that you're doing. Would your staff or somebody or even a volunteer be willing to come to our local chapters? Sure, we can talk about that, but I think it would be good for somebody from Watawba, to come to our local chapters.
I am always delighted to come to anybody's chapter, so please invite me. I love to visit chapters. I haven't been to any chapter meetings for quite a while. Nobody invites me.
Danielle, I am just so pleased to hear that you're going into the assistive living places, because we have a lot of members who are getting older and going into that, and I'm just wondering, how are you helping the people as they're hearing gets worse so that they can enjoy the books. I know of some people in my chapter that would really love to continue, but I'm just so thrilled to hear you're going into the assistive living. It just made my heart go pitter-patter.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, it's really important to us. A couple things, you know, the nice thing about the digital talking book players is the volume and the tone adjustments really help people a lot. And there is a special application people can fill out to get an amplifier that is so powerful that that special application actually has to be signed and approved by an audiologist, because it does get so loud that if you don't have a severe enough hearing impairment, it can damage your hearing.
Okay, so I'm going to connect with you so I can get you to our chapter so you can talk about this.
Perfect.
I think it would be wonderful for my members to hear this, and we're getting a lot of older people.
Perfect.
Thank you so much for doing that.
Thank you.
This is Sue, and I just want to say one of the things I think is important for our three agencies is that they all have consumer boards. And we need you to be on those consumer boards for your voices to be heard. Everybody has different qualifications. We don't have time now, but if you want to be a volunteer to be on one of the boards, contact the director or the staff person and let your voices be heard. I'm always getting up here saying, we need applicants for the SRC. We don't have any. Where are you guys? They want to hear us. And if we don't apply, we're not going to be heard.
Thank you, Sue. This is Danielle. That reminds me, I should say that our Patron Advisory Council has openings for membership right now, and the deadline for applications is November 15th. So the application is on our website, and if you can't find it, you can call the library and be directed to apply. So thank you.
This is Haley Edick. I think you all are doing a great job, and I don't want to put any more on your plate, but I have a question. My children are sighted, and I currently use print Braille books to read to them. And my children understand that I need the Braille, and they look at the letters. I used to get books that had descriptions of pictures. Therefore, I could, you know, identify colors with my kids and so forth, or what was in the picture. And I'm wondering if hand-copied Braille books are still a thing, or is that something of the past? And whether blind parents could network maybe with the School for the Blind for your Birth to Three books to read to their kids, you know, so that they have the accessibility of reading the Braille and their children have the accessibility of the print and pictures as any other child would.
This is Scott from the school. Absolutely, you can access our resource center to read books. I would encourage you to connect with myself or with Diet, who runs that Birth to Three program. And hard copy Braille books are still a thing. We produce a ton of them for the state. As you may be aware, we have a partnership with the women's prison in Gig Harbor, where we have 15 women that are incarcerated who are certified transcribers in literary Nemeth and music. And so they produce a ton of the books that we provide out to school districts around the state.
One last question.
Hi, first I want to say hello to Danielle. It's been a long time.
Hi.
My question is to Michael. One of the issues around the country is the impact that the 15% rule may have on agencies. Have you found that the application of the 15% rule has caused any issues in funding other elements of the services provided by the department?
Thanks, Paul. This is Michael. A number of VR agencies are finding that working off of 85% of their budget for adult services, because 15% is now focused on some very specific requirements, is making an impact. And a number of agencies, including our general agency, DVR, is going into a waitlist situation. Currently, that's not the case for us. Currently, we're able to serve everyone that comes to the door. But of course, when you're on a shrunken budget and when costs are going up, in the future, that may be an issue for us. It's something we're looking at seriously. We want to know that if we need to go on a wait list situation, we do it as early as possible so it's not chaotic, that we haven't spent all our money and then can't serve the people that are already through the door. So it needs to be thoughtful, and it's a possibility, but not a possibility at this moment.
All right. Thank you so very much. And how about another warm round of applause? Yeah, emphasize warm. All right, thank you. And we will now recess for lunch. Well, we can do one door prize, but the only thing standing between you and your lunch is the door prize.
Starts out with a $10 envelope from South Kitsap Council of the Blind, cash, and another second $10, and a third $10. And then a door prize from Lisa and Reg George, $5 Starbucks card, and peaches and berries bath set.
Okay. And this goes to Colin Fossil.
Not here? Where is he? Oh, he is.